This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
What's your biggest takeaway from the Cubs taking 2 out of 3 from the Nationals in Washington, D.C.? And how big of a start is this tonight for Yu Darvish against Jake Arrieta, given how well the Cubs are playing?
Yeah, I think that my takeaway is how well the Cubs are playing and how good the pitching has been in particular. And you saw John Lester take a step back. But for the most part, we're seeing a real example of, you know, as much as we talk about the offense and is the offense broken and, oh, my gosh, finally they're coming back around a little bit. And, oh, look, here's Anthony Rizzo back and he hits a homer. As much as that is the topic of conversation, it's really all about the pitching and has been for the Cubs. And that's my biggest takeaway is how good their pitching has been, which leads us to Yu Darvish. So this is a huge start for him because he is – effectively their fifth starter, and if not an actual an actual lineup fifth starter, certainly in production fifth starter. And Jake Arrieta is a beloved Cub who had an unbelievable career here. He had he put together as great a sequence of games, as great a run, where you literally thought every time he was out there that he could possibly throw a no-hitter, where we were breaking down, throwing across your body, and how could he do it, and look at the strength of the guy. And he's like he's a bit of a cock-of-the-walk type of guy, right? He's something of a rooster. He wants to show you his feathers. He's a peacock of a man. And I think that he's really going to be ready for this performance. So Yu Darvish better be up for it, and he better be good, and you would like him to make everyone forget that that decision was made.
Good luck with that. Yeah, you know, I think the biggest takeaway, the Cubs taking 2 out of 3 for the Nationals, you know, one Friday night in D.C. for Chris Bryant. This is going to be the game you remember. If Chris Bryant is on the Hall of Fame trajectory, this is one of those moments where it's going to come up on the highlight reel. 3 home runs, and the first time in 40 years since Dave Kingman did it in 1979 on the same date, May 17th, 1979. That's kind of weird. 3 different pitchers, 3 home runs, and Chris Bryant was tremendous. And that was the Chris Bryant game in the Cubs weekend. 2 out of 3 against the Nationals. John Lester didn't have it Saturday night. Big deal. They come back last night. C-Sheck gives them 2 1/3 out of the bullpen. Their bullpen kind of holds on, survives, and they come home for a big moment at Wrigley Field on Monday night. It's a big moment, I think, if Darvish wins. If he doesn't win and if he crumbles and if he falters, then it's going to be another one of those where you rationalize, you justify, you move on, and you hope that he recovers from it because Mike Montgomery's right there waiting in the wings to fill in as your sixth starter, kind of your emergency plan. Jake Arrieta has never faced the Cubs. This is going to be a big night for Jake Arrieta. The fans should give him all the praise and applause and ovation that he deserves. He earned it from 2015 to 16. This guy is, as Darvish said last week, a Cubs legend. There's no two ways around it, but you can't look at it that way if you're Yu Darvish. You got to get out of your own head, you know, reduce your pitching your array of pitches, just be simple, do that better, and, you know, rely on what's working, and maybe you can come out of this with a victory. You can't make it bigger than it is because there's going to be a lot of emotion at Wrigley Field tonight, and there should be. But if you're Darvish, you just have to try to – this is a great test for him. It's a great opportunity for him. It's not as big of a challenge as it is an opportunity, because if he wins this game, maybe he can take off.
Same takeaway from over the weekend. Chris Bryant going back to Friday. We know the Nationals bullpen is horrendous, but three homers in three innings. And then the on-base streak stops on Saturday. So that ends. Oh, what a shame.
Molly jinxed it.
Yes, he did.
I just asked what it was.
No, but you're so right about it. It's kind of ridiculous.
What do you mean?
It's 0 for 4 with a walk. All right, it continues. Yeah.
The point is to get on base, Joe.
Yes, I understand. And Bryant, after the concerns early, now all of a sudden you start looking at the numbers, and he's right there with Alex Bregman as the best third baseman, if you want to call him a third baseman. Bryant, that is, right now in all of baseball. So I go to Bryant there, and as far as tonight goes, between Darvish and Arrieta, they'll say all the right things. It's one regular season game, but we know it's much more to Jake, and it's a regular season game that we've been talking about a week once we saw the pitching matchups align here. And it's going to be a pressure-packed spot, and that's been a criticism of Darvish in the past. Okay, can you show up in those big moments? And Dustin, the Cubs are -135 favorites.
Wow,
interesting.
Well, I mean, what can you say about Chris Bryant? The guy is not only back to his best, but he arguably is swinging the bat right now better than we've seen him since 2016. Maybe the best that we've seen him ever. I mean, the stretch that he's in right now, you look at...
Not a bat, it's an axe.
It is an axe, and he takes mighty hacks with the said apparatus. I mean, people are always, you know, becoming prisoner of the moment, and what have you done for me lately, and short memories, and now more than ever, I feel like. And as much as everybody loves Javi Baez and the flair and the charisma and everything about that, Chris Bryant was and will remain the best player on this team.
Wow.
As long as he's got the uniform on. He was when he came up 4 years ago, whenever it was. He was last year, even though he was banged up and Javi was the MVP and all this stuff. It's always Chris Bryant. It always will be Chris Bryant.
Bodie.
Honorable mention to David Bodie. Okay. As far as the offense as a whole, I mean, you know, there's going to be ups and downs, and there's going to be peaks and valleys. And I think even with the Cubs specifically, because this core of the offense is the same one that it has been for a while, and we've seen lower patches from them, and we've seen extravagant highs from them as well, and that's going to continue. I think that's just kind of the personality of the team. And I do just have to own up to this quickly. I picked the Nationals to win the National League. I was way off on that. They are quite bad. Their bullpen in particular, Joe, like you said, except for Sean Doolittle. But I like him a little bit. We'll talk about that briefly.
Everybody's made really great observations, and I never thought I'd be saying this, but did the Cubs maybe find a consistent leadoff hitter? I was actually shocked to see that Kyle Schwarber was back there after the third game in Cincinnati. And he looked okay, right? Takes some walks. He's on base. He's scoring some runs. Maybe this is going to work. Maybe it took 2 years. Bryant had a fantastic night. I can't sit here and say who cares about John Lester having a not so good performance Saturday night. I was also a little bit worried about the wheels falling off of Kyle Hendricks. And it's not that he allowed base runners, it's that he allowed the home runs, right? That was a huge three-run home run to probably the best player on the Nationals right now from an offensive standpoint. They're 10-1-1 in the last 12 series. He'll take that all the time. The only disappointing thing is that the Braves, despite all this, the Braves couldn't get it done except for one game against the Brewers, so the Brewers are still 1.5 back. You'd like to have a little bit more. You'd think you'd be 3 or 4 games in the clear after winning, you know, 10-1-1 in 12 series, and you're still just a game and a half. This thing's going to come down to September for sure.
Dustin worried about the wheels coming off. How about the shoulder coming off Steve Cishek if Joe Maddon continues to ride him into the ground
though,
like this?
He's done that before,
yeah,
Kevin.
He was
I thought
burned
the same
out in
thing.
The last month of the season
yeah,
last year.
I don't know. I thought that if different pitcher might have a different concern, but he's been pretty durable.
And it was his only outing of the series, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they'll be careful with that.
There's a lot of questions in there.
Was Joe Maddon sending a message to Major League Baseball regarding C.J. Edwards when he protested Sean Doolittle's delivery? And which turn of phrase is worse, double toe tap or double doink?
I actually liked what Joe Maddon did. I liked the fact that he stood up for his players. He was consistent. He talked about being a parent and sticking up for his kids. And I understand that. And I think that when you look at what he was doing with Sean Doolittle, I have to say my first reaction was what a lot of people also shared via Twitter was, boy, that's going to be awkward when the Cubs trade for Sean Doolittle in July, because when he gets into the clubhouse, and then I found out later what Sean Doolittle said about Joe Maddon being trying to be the smartest guy in the room, it's going to make it really awkward when he gets to Wrigley Field in July after the Cubs trade for their closer. I don't know if it accomplished anything necessarily. They called it off the next day. There's no official protest, but the point was made. The protest was dropped, but it doesn't really matter. Joe did make his point. It is odd. It was strange because even though he was grazing it and not stopping it and all the technicality, it looked like the same principle, which, you know, C.J. Edwards was told, thankfully, as it turns out, that he needed to change his mechanics. I don't know why Doolittle does get away with it. And maybe it was an attempt to get inside his head. I think it was more trying to defend C.J. Edwards, and it was based on principle more than it was trying to rattle Doolittle. But whatever purpose it was meant to serve, I applaud a manager who's sticking up for his players in a way that is consistent with his personality. This is what Joe does. This is either you either like it or you hate it. And on Saturday night, I liked it.
Yeah, I would say that it was a premeditated protest. I thought that they had seen something, and it was similar to what C.J. Edwards had been doing earlier in the year, and that's really what this was about. It wasn't about what he actually saw when the guy – it felt premeditated. It felt like he knew going in that that's how the guy pitched, and the minute he did it, he was going to run out, and then he had the protest, and then they let it go, and they dropped it. But it was – it was really a protest of why did you screw with the mind of our young pitcher and ban that when you didn't ban it for everyone? And here's an example of another guy doing roughly the same thing. So, hey, Major League Baseball, I've got my thumb to my nose and I'm waving fingers at you and I may start making noises from my mouth. That's all that was. I really felt that it was, you know, the fact that they got angry about it, and he made it. It was grandstanding, but it was premeditated grandstanding. It was a message not to Washington, not to Sean Doolittle, but to Major League Baseball, and it was all about C.J. Edwards.
Yeah, it was a great point by Joe here. Sometimes decisions made by Major League Baseball just leave you quite confused. What are you doing? Okay, in spring training, you can pitch that way. The season's starting now. You can't pitch that way. What? What are you talking about? And then the game goes under protest, and then the umpire alerts the press box by drawing a big P in the air. Like, what are we doing here in this sport? So, yeah, I thought it was a...
Where was the sparkler?
I was like, what did he call me?
Hey! Whitmire! But no, yeah, Joe makes a great point. The protest, even though it was called off the next day, and double doink, much, much worse. It just brings back the emotions, and your skin starts to crawl. Then you think about the Today Show.
Oh, boy.
And then, yeah, the rookie minicamp, you have 15 kickers coming in. You still don't have a kicker, so double doink, much worse.
Double doink, a much funnier expression than double toe tap.
I've never laughed.
But it's the alliterative.
But it was the draw. It's what happened with the double doink that was so horrible, just, right, Joe? I mean,
yeah.
You never laughed, but it's a funny thing to say.
It's funny, like...
Doink is a funny word.
In a tragic way, doink is a good word, and he was a great clown. But I think that...
Favorite wrestler.
Yeah, he was a legend. The double doink will be, you know, one of those things that will be infamous in Chicago and probably across, you know, the NFL sphere for the foreseeable future. We're always going to remember Cody Parkey and the double doink. So I think that is a worse turn of phrase, and worse meaning that it hurts a little bit more on a personal level. As far as Joe and Sean Doolittle, I will say this. Joe is definitely sticking up for his guy here. And I think even though it was grandstanding and he was making a big scene out of it, and he always does like to bring attention onto himself, I think he was just trying to stick up for Carl Edwards in this instance. I will give him the benefit of the doubt here.
Oh, I love it. Kevin's coming close to a compliment and apologizing for it.
But, great. I mean, we're comparing, this is apples and bowling balls here. I mean, if you just take a look at C.J. Edwards and his windup and whatever the hell he was trying to do earlier in the season, and if you take a look at it side by side next to Sean Doolittle or Clayton Kershaw or Kenley Jansen or any of these other guys that do the same little tap, it's not the same. It's not even remotely the same. So shout out to the Cubs for, you know, playing two outs under protest. Real brave of them. But this is just absolute lunacy. I mean, Joe, Joe. Come on.
Well, first of all, I think Joe would have been a hypocrite had he not done it. You want a guy stepping up for his own players. And I'm assuming that there was also a lot of chatter in the Cubs dugout. Like, hey, isn't that? So I think also because
they knew
of that
going
chatter,
in.
But that, like Molly said, Dustin, don't you think they were planning this? They knew
was
the minute
protest.
He came into the game. Hey, Joe, see who's in the game?
They knew pitching. If he came in the game, they were trailing. And they knew that if he came in the game, that's how he pitched. And they knew that they would run out there and protest.
I'm just not a fan of, if you're going to protest, then protest. Like, where it falls short is, even if you do find it to be asinine, follow through on it. Like, don't just let it. Why not? What harm would there be? And somebody tell me what the harm is.
Commit to being asinine.
Right.
That's a t-shirt. You know it's not going to last.
Right.
You made your point. Maybe it's almost like a courtroom. I object. You know, it's probably not going to mean anything, but you do it anyway because it's out of principle.
As far as the Doolittle thing goes, I think it is fun that there's the possibility that Doolittle could end up being a Cub
great.
And all that little side story and drama, so that would be great. I'm all for Sean Doolittle being part of the Cubs later on.
It's a great question.
Who should the White Sox start tonight against Houston, and are they throwing away a game?
No, not necessarily. I mean, you can steal a game. It's very hard to do it against that team, but they need to bring up a starter. And I honest to God, this is going to sound crazy. Bring up one of these guys from AAA that's got an 8 ERA. Bring up one of these guys and hope that the adrenaline rush and the excitement and all the rest of it, and also not having faced guys and all the rest of it, gets them somehow through five innings, and then you can – four innings, I guess, and then you can go to your bullpen start. But I would bring up a young starter and hope to just sort of tap into something here somehow. I don't think a pure bullpen start. Listen, the fact is they had the rain shortened game and they've got guys that are rested and they should be able. They got an extra pitcher, so they should be able to get through a bullpen start. But why not let one of these young guys in Charlotte have a taste of the major leagues and see if it maybe drives them out of whatever funk they're in, because the only pitcher worth a damn is Dylan Cease, and they claim they're not going to bring him up.
Well, that would expose the fact that you don't have anything at AAA besides Dylan Cease if you bring up somebody up here and it gets rocked.
So then you're going to AA and bringing one of those guys
up? I don't know. I don't know if that's too big of a leap and too far of a bridge. I just think that today's experiment, it just exposes the fact the White Sox have left themselves shorthanded in their pitching rotation. That's not a good look. That's not a good look going into Houston. That's not a good look anywhere. And you have, Ross Detweiler, he pitched yesterday. Yep. He pitched yesterday for Charlotte. Dylan Cease pitched on Friday. He's not coming up to do this. Although he would be the guy that you could think you could justify bringing him up at this time if you wanted to do that. He doesn't have the command. He has the control. But I think he's a guy that you could look at and say, all right, maybe what's he going to give you? Five innings, six innings? There are going to be high expectations, but they're not going to do that. So today you're stuck. You're stuck with going the approach of having a bullpen day. You're going to create the idea that there's an opener to your – maybe you start with Colum A. Maybe who knows what direction Ricky Renteria is going to go, because he hasn't really left any hints and the front office has left him sort of shorthanded. So I don't know what the Sox are thinking going into Houston shorthanded with four – pitchers in a five-man rotation, and they have left themselves exposed a bit, and I don't think it's a good look at all.
Yeah, after seeing Detweiler start yesterday for Charlotte, I was a little confused, and I considered the opener, but that's not Renteria's style.
No.
They're not going to go with the opener. The starter tonight will be DeSpaña. They signed him over the weekend, assigned him to Charlotte yesterday, and I think he'll get the call up today. He has some experience as a starter in this league, so that will be a guy. Feel like throwing a game? It'll feel that way going up against Houston to start this rough road trip. It probably could be a pretty tough week for the White Sox here. And sometimes Emily mentioned you're looking for five. Yeah, you are. And if the Astros get to their starter tonight, they're probably going to have to wear it because you don't want to kill your bullpen. You don't have any off days coming up. They're just going to have to wear it. Like, I was out there on Friday. Oh, God, just Nova. It was like, okay, you're going to wear this one. Give up your 7-8 runs. Give us as much as you got.
I mean, you got to throw somebody out there. And, yeah, Nova looks like a dud right now. Irvin Santana was dispatched fairly quickly. Another season of Carlos Rodon and his injury problems. This just speaks to a larger organizational failure and what I have been calling one of the worst off seasons in Chicago sports history, with the way the White Sox bungled Manny Machado and then signed these bums in the rotation and signed Yonder Alonso. I swear to God, if I have to watch Yonder Alonso much longer, I'm going to lose it. I'm just going to go off the deep end. I'm going to buy a van and drive off into the woods and just live off the land forever. If I have to see Yonder Alonso swing and miss and just stink out loud so often, this guy needs to be DFA'd like 3 weeks ago. I'm much more upset about Yonder Alonso than I am the pitching staff right now, but it's all a problem. And really, the White Sox right now, it's a good thing Eloy is back, because it was getting to the point where I was only being able to get myself up for games that were going to be started by either Giolito or Lopez. And I'm just kind of, you know, fading out a little bit on the other three. But now with the offense sort of regaining its shape, if they get Alonso out there or off the team, I'll feel a little bit better. But just horrible offseason catching up to them, and the injuries are just bad luck. But it's just, it doesn't help.
You're
going to
DFA him? You just want him gone? You want anything for him?
Who's going to give up a bag of balls for Yonder Alonso right now? Stop it. That's just mean-spirited of you.
How about Carson Fulmer?
No. Oh, no. No.
Send him and Alonso out on the same boat together.
I don't know, fair question, though. Like the worst thing you can say in sports talk radio. I have no freaking idea who's going to start tonight. This is really weird.
No one does.
I mean, well, Joe seemed pretty.
Well, they did
confident.
Sign that guy. Yeah,
I mean, he's connecting dots. But I mean, that sounds as good as anybody. But I guess my point is, if you're still having any kind of faith in Carson Fulmer, and I understand that he's not being groomed to be a starter. I get that. But why not put him in and let him go from the jump and see what he can do? I'm not going to be like Kevin and say you DFA the guy, but you keep putting him out there and you keep seeing what he's got. They could do a lot worse. I don't know that they could do any better than Carson Fulmer tonight.
You know, this is an awkward question, Casey.
What was more surprising, Brooks Koepka's near choke en route to victory or Tiger Woods failing to make the cut at the PGA Championship?
Well, I think in terms of surprises, Tiger Woods not making the cut was the biggest surprise of the weekend, because you expected him to recover from a slow opening round, but he never did. And I kept on waiting for that to happen on Friday, and it never happened. So the layoff did affect him. All the things that we talked about on Friday during the show came to pass, and it wasn't his weekend. Now, as for Koepka, that was nearly a colossal choke, a historic letdown and collapse, and it didn't happen because he responded to the crowd chanting DJ, DJ, and that was interesting to hear him. He needs something in him as an athlete to rechannel his focus and redirect his attention, because apparently he loses it quickly, and you can see the way that he performs in majors and way compared to the way he performs every other tournament. He does need something to, you know, sharpen that focus and that edge. And it happens. And it's happened a lot. Now he's got four majors in 23 months. You know, there's only four other golfers in history that have done that. Their names: Hogan, Palmer, Nicklaus, and Woods. Now Koepka joins that group. That's pretty elite company. So when this guy is on, and he was on for three of the 4 days at Bethpage, this is a guy who is an elite golfer, can be historically good if he can just pay attention long enough to be historically good. So Tiger was the biggest surprise, but I think Koepka made the most indelible mark.
Koepka wired that tournament, and it's only the fifth time that's happened in whatever how many years, and hasn't happened in 35 years or something. So that was pretty extraordinary to actually just start the way he started, shoot the course record, and then and get himself to a victory. I agree with you. It was very close at the end. And they pulled away. The cameras pulled away when he was hitting that shot on 18. That was a crucial shot. They were doing an interview with Dustin Johnson, I think. I said on Friday, I didn't think Tiger was going to make the cut. And it was because of the way he golfed. His opening round was so god-awful. It was unbelievable. I mean, he really could do nothing. When a guy is golfing like that, the idea that it's going to turn around, I know he only missed the cut by a stroke, I believe, right? But he just wasn't golfing well enough. And I think it was the layoff. Maybe he was self-satisfied. Maybe it was the Presidential Medal of Honor that he didn't deserve. Whatever it was, he did not. He did not come prepared.
We can't wait to see what's next, Tiger.
Yeah, we saw what was next, and it was a guy that hadn't golfed in a month. You know, it was just weird. And I get it; he's got the back issue, and he's got to watch the way he prepares and all that. But look at the difference between the two guys physically. You know, you got one guy that's just an absolute maniac, workout warrior type, and you know, turned himself into a bigger monster than he was. And the other guy is apparently still battling health issues and frail and trying to golf at his own pace. I think Tiger will be good when we get to the British Open, but I would be surprised if he does anything next time out. I just think that unfortunately it's a really tricky game, and it's obviously that, you know, you're dealing with more things. It's not you against anyone. It's you against the course, and it takes unbelievable focus. And for whatever reason, Brooks Koepka has it only during the majors, apparently. It's a good time to have it.
Wire to wire. I mean, just incredible. Random PGA Tour event. You don't see that much anymore. The leader after Thursday, okay, that's nice. My reaction is, okay, we know who's not going to win because it just doesn't happen much. And the conditions very rough yesterday, and most golfers are going to have one bad day. You don't see 4 days of domination. It's just a matter of what day is it going to happen. I mean, the best score yesterday was Gary Woodland, and he was only 2 under par. Nobody else even touched -2. So I expected him to come back a little bit, but he didn't think it would be one shot away. But that's exactly where we were. Tiger more surprising, even just because I expected Koepka to come back to the pack. I wasn't expecting a 7 or 8 stroke victory yesterday. So I'll say Tiger was more surprising that he didn't make the cut, even though I wasn't expecting big things.
708 texter suggests that Tiger had Trump stink on him, which would have explained the weekend.
That's
for sure.
That's my line. Wait a minute. It's my turn. Not my turn yet.
I'm not entirely surprised by Tiger. I mean, it's always a little jarring to see him just kind of fall by the wayside like he did. But, you know, I kind of alluded to this on Friday. You know, him at the Masters this year kind of seemed like a one-off. Not that he's never going to be in contention ever again at a big tournament, but it just, like, whatever came together that weekend seemed like an isolated event, and he's not going to be able to keep up that level of consistency. As far as Koepka, his near choke, I don't care if it was a near choke, he won. He's got the trophy or the whatever the hell they give you, the big metal tin thing, and a lot of money and a very hot girlfriend. So I think he came out pretty well on the weekend.
Yeah, I think Brooks Koepka won the weekend, but
when he finally decided to kiss
her.
Yeah,
he didn't kiss her before the last round. That was funny.
Yeah, she was not
that
not
was
happy.
That was a really funny video.
It was very funny.
I mean, she looked really hurt, and you had to wonder about their future. I mean, yeah. The way that she reacted, come on. That was a honest moment.
He'll be okay. You know the old line, you can't eat steak every night. I think I could figure out how to eat steak every night, but maybe Brooks wants to switch. Bored. Listen, Tiger, Molly, I was shocked. You went out on a limb on Friday and said that Tiger would not make the cut. I went out on the limb and said that one of the guys from that group of one under would actually beat Koepka. I didn't think he'd wire to wire it, right? And Dustin Johnson made it close. But just, you know, the problem was he was so far ahead going into Sunday until I saw on social media that there was something going on was when I wanted to get in front of the television and see what was going on. And that leaderboard, when you woke up Sunday morning, it was awful. What? You know, Mark Cannizzaro came on here and touted Rory McIlroy, who ended up coming back quite a bit, but you know, +1 was like good for 7th place. Jordan Spieth made a little bit of a run, but not enough. You thought maybe he could shoot a good score Sunday and put a little pressure, but it wasn't good enough. So yeah, good for Brooks Koepka, I guess. But here was the situation where if Tiger could have put something together, like there, that was a major to be had for him. Like there was an opportunity there if he was more on his game, and you wonder, was he just fat and happy over winning that Masters?
I
and that
disagree,
was good
Dustin.
Like
how are you going to
been made?
How was he going to beat that guy?
Yeah, see, that I kind of do too,
he beat him,
Dustin.
He beat him at the Masters,
but the thing is, I think that Koepka almost let down because he could. And I wonder, as locked in as he was robo-golfer. And he was such a laser.
And that's what's boring about it. Dave, I was talking to a guy yesterday who's a huge golf guy, and I said, that's the problem. It's like robo-golfer. It's like if you were playing against Golden Tee, like that's how the Golden Tee guy would be. Just 300 yards every time, perfect second shot, you know, probably sinks the 20-footer or less putt, maybe two putts. So he's birdie par, birdie par, birdie par, birdie par. Boring.
This is sort of a trick question.
The ratings are going to be horrible. Yeah.
This segment brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets are on sale now at NUSports.com. Will Toronto's double overtime victory over Milwaukee prove important in the NBA Finals if Golden State can sweep Portland? And can the Trailblazers win a game given Damian Lillard's rib injury? Is that an excuse or an explanation?
Well, there's a lot there. I would say that my takeaway from the weekend of NBA play is just how wrecked these teams are. I mean, you know, the Golden State Warriors, as long as you got Steph, Clay, and Dre, you're going to be able to beat anybody. I mean, they're just unbelievable. And Draymond Green was just fantastic, just really filled in all the blanks. He gets the ball. He can do so many different things, and he helps them in so many different ways. But now Andre Iguodala has got an Achilles problem. He only played 18 minutes in that game. That's scary as all get out because he's been a crucial part of it and a big, big component in the playoffs and certainly in previous finals. So you kind of need that guy. I don't think, you know, there's not even any reports of Kevin Durant doing anything. And so that's kind of scary. And the idea of Boogie coming back, is that good? Is that something you need to have happen here for the finals? I think that Golden State needs to win this thing in four in order to rest up and get everybody healthy and hope that Toronto can somehow win another game to stretch the Bucks. The Bucks looked exhausted by the end of that game. Again, we talked earlier about what's going on with Kawhi Leonard. His legs are going out from under him. I mean, and he played 54 minutes. So I think all these teams are really staggering to the end of the season, and you'll get more rest once the finals start. They give you time between games. It's a lot better than it is up to this point. But I got to tell you, I thought the game last night was bad basketball. They were missing a ton of shots. They were, you know, we could talk about defense. There were tons of misses, man.
Yeah.
There was bad offense. There was turnovers. These guys are absolutely wrecked.
I think all your points are good ones. I think
Damian Lillard, the rib thing.
They're defensible.
Is that an excuse?
No, I don't think so. I think it's
legit. Explain something.
You can understand a little bit better why he has not been the player that he has been throughout the rest of the playoffs and in the regular season when you hear about his rib injury. And Molly, you're right. Last night was as dramatic as it was, as close as it became, it was not that great of basketball. It wasn't a great clinic of Eastern Conference playoff basketball. And it just made me believe what I believe going into this since the playoffs, since Kevin Durant went down. It doesn't matter. The Warriors are going to win this. The Warriors, I can't explain it, but I don't think it's hard to defend. They're almost better without Kevin Durant, and I can't explain it. They play better. They're more fun to watch. They share the ball. They look like they're having more fun, and they are hard to beat, and they're going to be as hard to beat as they were with Durant. So if he comes back, if he doesn't come back, it's going to create a lot of conversation, a lot of suspense, and he is entitled to come back. He's a big part of that team. He's the best player in the NBA, arguably, when he is healthy. So I don't understand what's going on here except for they have other players who have stepped forward, and you've seen Steph Curry become the MVP guy that he hasn't had to be with Durant around. So I think all these things about the Eastern Conference Finals fatigue and when the series ends and the rest factor and the rust factor, valid conversation points. But I don't think it matters because the Warriors are the class of these playoffs, and they're going to win no matter who comes out of the East.
Yep. Giannis had 12 points and 8 turnovers, and the Bucks almost won that game. with 12 points out of Giannis. So many times down the stretch, you're thinking, boy, it seems like the Raptors are just trying to give this one away. I do expect Golden State to close this thing out tonight. Then they're going to sit around until next Thursday when the NBA Finals starts. And as far as Damian Lillard, I think it's an explanation. We saw him go off against OKC early in the playoffs when he scored 50. And of late, you've been waiting for that big Dame Lillard game, and we just haven't seen it. Last six games, he's only scored more than 23 once, so they don't have a shot.
No, no shot. Golden State is going to run through, as they've done pretty much every year for the past handful of seasons, minus the LeBron year. But, you know, you say that they're better, David, without Kevin Durant. I don't know if I'd necessarily say that. They're different, certainly, and they play different, and they have to play different, you know, when you're taking a Hall of Famer off of there. But, I mean, they're so well-coached, and they're so, you know, well-drilled in what they need to do at all times, and they're so good at what they do that it's going to be really impossible for any team to beat them four times within a seven-game series, especially when you look at just the attrition and the injuries and the just the wear and tear. I mean, this is such a long season. These guys started playing basketball in October.
Maybe you're right, Kevin. Maybe the wrong word is better. Maybe they're just as tough to beat, though.
Yeah, yeah, but in a different way. Yeah.
I wonder if the league goes to school on them. Like, this is a team that we haven't seen in a couple of years, right?
Sure.
So if the league goes to school on them, how much more difficult would it be for them without Kevin Durant? I'm saying for over the course of an entire year.
Well, this team with Durant won how many? 57 games this year? Could you envision the Warriors without Durant next year winning 57 games?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm kind of with you, David. I think it's more interesting maybe without him. I mean, Durant's going to be one of the best players in the NBA no matter what team he's on. I just think they may be a better team. I think he takes away from the Splash Brothers when he's on the court. It's hard to share the ball with that many guys. I think this game's hugely important to the Warriors because of what you mentioned, Mully, with the injuries, and that would give them – you get it done tonight, and they get a ton of time off, get everybody healthy and rested and back together. And I think, to Kevin's point, I think the Blazers are just – pooped. I think they're just absolutely exhausted.
All righty, 312-644-6767. That's the 5 at 5. We'll get to your calls next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.